Blog Talk Radio.
Fios is not cable. We're wired differently, which means you can get the fastest internet available with equal upload and download speeds from 50 to 500 megs. So you can upload 200 photos before your favorite song is finished. Click the ad and switch to Fios today to get our best offer ever.
Hello,
Blog
welcome.
Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to our weekly internet program. I'm your host, Minister Joel Lewis, and you're listening to Free on the Inside internet program to inform you, to encourage you, and to challenge you to be all you could be, to challenge you to make a difference in the neighborhood, in your community, in your town, to challenge you to apply your gift and your skills to help change a life. That's our logo, help change a life, but not just any life, help change a life in Jesus' name. This morning we have a guest on the program this morning. He's no stranger to our internet program, Dr. Michael Fleming. This morning our topic is about criminal justice reform. Minister Fleming is working very diligently with the Faith in Texas, a multiracial faith movement for social justice. Faith movement is a part of PICO National Network. PICO stands for People Impacting Community Through Organization. PICO is a nation's largest network that develops civic leaders in low and moderate income, faith-based communication, economic, and racial justice. At this time, we have Dr. Fleming on the line. Good morning, Dr. Fleming.
Thank you.
All right,
if you see Scotty Schwartz left us
in the building, thank you for that. And we'll bring him up in just a second here. Good morning, Dr. Fleming.
Good morning, Minister. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. Thank you for being a guest on our weekly internet program. I just did a little short interlude on the a program in the ministry which you're a part of. Will you give us more information on the Faith in Texas?
Well, let me give you some background on why faith in Texas has become necessary. We're living in a time or a day and age in which you would think that many of the problems that we've had in the past as they relate to racial inequality, widespread discrimination, a lack of respect for one another and church and God, that those things would have long succumbed to the truth in terms of their values, and that we would be a people of one nation, one cause for the common good of all men and women, and forming viable communities. But unfortunately, that is not the case. And I guess in some respects, the Bible speaks to that when it talks about in the last days, many would wax cold and they'll love one another, and we would become, treacherous and murderous and lovers of money and things as opposed to our fellow human beings. And that the only difference and the only way we're going to have the ability to make a difference is by the church being a light and being salt. We're called to be a unifying agent. And until we fulfill that role, we're going to continue to have problems. And what kind of problems are we talking about? What are we talking about when 90% of the white people in America who take the implicit association test and express an inherent racial bias for white people versus black people, and they're not even aware of it? Or when young black teenage men are being shot and killed by white police officers, and it triggers extraordinarily intense social commentaries about racial tension in communities, such as what took place in Ferguson, Missouri, and more recently here in Dallas. When mentally unbalanced individuals, be it young white men or black men who are sitting quietly in their church or school, and then someone comes in and kills them. I mean, it's a tumultuous time. It's not safe. It's not safe for our families. It's not safe for our children. and it seems like chaos is becoming the rule. So what needs to take place? Well, the first thing, there needs to be a new national conversation about race. And we need to be willing to acknowledge that we do have a racial problem. And that we have a system in place that seems to favor one segment of our population and deny large segments of our population because of these people of color, black, brown, red, and so forth. So what do we do? Well, we need to stand up. And when I say we, I'm talking about the church. So Pace in Texas, as you mentioned, is a coalition of faith-based organizations, congregations, who recognize that until we as a body of Christ come together and represent the kingdom of God and to manifest the power of God by manifesting the knowledge, the understanding of how to use knowledge in a way that we can address the social issues that are so pervasive in our society.
And that is so true, doctor. That is so true. And, you know, as you would, I'll give you a humble pause here for a minute. And you were saying something that I really was thinking about, how we should be able to use those two. This social injustice that we're seeing and that we're experiencing, I'm talking about as a society, it's nothing new. These things have been going on for quite a while. But now since we are better equipped to handle these things, I'm saying that we could go out and go to our leaders and hold people accountable. At one time, we couldn't hold anybody accountable. But now, since we can, we ought to make full use of these of the information and the skills that we have. And I like what you're doing and some of the things that you're doing, because at one time, as a matter of fact, not one time, but you are very instrumental in helping ban the box in certain areas. Would you be able to share that with us regarding ban the box?
Well, when we talk about ban the box, we are attempting to address the continued systemic disenfranchisement of segments of our population that are deemed inexpendable.
Yes.
What we're talking about is the overrepresentation of people of color in the correctional system, specifically as it relates to being incarcerated. And when those individuals are taken away from their families and taken away from their community, all right, there's a significant loss of human talent, and also the financial and economic impact. Upon return, you would think that these individuals, after having served their time, would be embraced and allowed to re-enter society and become gainfully employed and begin to contribute once again to the well-being of our communities, and particularly our families. But unfortunately, that is not the case. We don't seem to be a nation of forgiving people anymore who allow second or maybe third chance. Individuals return with the mandate that they get a job, they can contribute towards their family's well-being. In many instances, that means child support or restitution, various other kinds of financial debt and demands upon their life. Yes, less than one quarter of those individuals are able to secure employment or housing or the other basic necessities that go with reintegration, such as insurance and so forth. And one of the primary reasons for that is a question on the application that asks if you are a convicted felon. And if you answer yes to that question, unfortunately, most of the time, you will not get an interview, and that application may wind up being trashed. And so
yes,
the economic impact on our communities and on our families, and particularly the collateral impact upon our children, and the fact that research shows that when returning individuals are denied equal access to jobs, housing, and so forth, the children of those formerly incarcerated individuals are 3 to 5 times more likely to commit a crime, okay, to wind up with less education and a poor economic and financial future. So we've been working locally and with some national organizations in trying to address that. And there have been some good news and some success. We know that there are about 23 states now that have passed legislation that banned the box. And
yes,
there are two cities here in Texas, Austin and most recently Dallas County, has passed a local ordinance that prohibits the asking of a question until such time that you're actually considering offering an individual ballot, at which time then you can do a background check and use the information that you're able to obtain only as it relates to the job in which the individual is applying for. For instance, if you are applying for a job in the financial sector, you know, as a bank teller or something, and you have a history of criminal activities or convictions related to financial issues, then that information can be used in determining whether or not that's a good match. But if you, for instance, have a drug possession, you're applying for a job in a warehouse, or you're applying for a job at a supermarket, or you're applying for a job as a salesperson at a car lot or a department store, then there may not be any correlation between your conviction and the responsibilities related to that job. And so why should it be used to continue to penalize you and punish you long beyond the completion of your sentence? And so it is our intent that we can somehow or another influence federal legislation, and as we begin to work here in Dallas with the private community and private businesses in implementing those kinds of policies that will encourage the interviewing and the consideration of employment for formerly incarcerated persons. And once we're able to do that, we believe that it will go a long way toward addressing some of the increasingly high rates of recidivism with formerly incarcerated persons, and it will provide the economic seed for strengthening our communities and particularly strengthening our families.
All right. But we're going to just pause here for a minute for a station identification. You're listening to Blog Talk Radio with Minister Lewis as your host. You can join the conversation with the number 310-982-4126. We're talking with Dr. Michael Flemings about criminal justice reform. We ask you to call in to voice your opinion regarding this very hot topic here, because we all know someone that's maybe wrongly convicted. So this is an opportunity to get more information and be a part of this great organization, Faith in Texas. And we have a call on the line here. This is our co-host, Brother Daniels. He's on the line here. Good morning, Brother Daniel.
Good morning, Reverend Lewis.
Welcome to our program. We have Dr. Flemings on the line here, and he's given us a lot of information regarding criminal justice reform. So we're just going to sit back and relax and enjoy what he has to share with us. Do you have any questions for him at this time? If not, we'll come back.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions to ask.
Go right ahead. He's on the line.
Okay, Dr. Flemings. You know what happened yesterday with this case between that dude that was over the Black Lives Matter organization in Dallas? He went downtown and he got arrested, and they found out he had other charges on him. So I'm saying that if the people that organized that organization knew that he had a background behind him, why did they let him lead this march and put himself in the scrutiny in front of all these people to just make, just like it was mocking things, you know what I'm saying? You put a guy that's talking about don't do anything wrong, and you got this guy, he got a history of child abuse. Dr. Fleming, you know, I mean, if you're doing something, you got to almost be squeaky clean every time you go in for these people, because they're going to have background checks and look for you for the first time that you were born, you know, all the way back to time, you know, and it's really a serious thing, because, you know, the media nowadays, they take everything and just escalate, you know. So what's your opinion on what happened yesterday?
Well, I haven't had a chance to review or look at the specifics. But let me just say this in general. Having a background doesn't necessarily preclude anyone from being involved in community advocacy and justice reform. And having charges aren't necessarily convictions. And you know, I don't know what the case is with this particular division. But I know that in this country, there have been many individuals who have been in the forefront advocating for social and justice reform who had a background and who had arrest records that were primarily related to the system and its attempt to defame and to diminish the power and capacity of changing. I'm not saying that this gentleman's charges or past convictions aren't justified. I don't know. But I also know that oftentimes what we get through the mass media isn't necessarily reflective or indicative of the whole truth. And our mass media and our media is basically in the hands of a few private, powerful people. And the news that's also presented today is a caricature, which means it's used to sensationalize and other ratings, and it's also used by the powers that be, as I said, to undermine the power and the viability of particular individuals and candidates who are attacking the system. So, you know, that's kind of my take on it. Now, this gentleman, I don't know him, and I know that there's been some speculation about whether or not he should be a forefront. But squeaky clean people don't necessarily exist anymore in what we call the field of community advocacy.
I got another question for you now. You know, a couple of days ago, we had a district attorney, a lady, named Susan Hawk. She has drug use. It's been going on for about a year. She's been halfway coming to work. She was going to work. She was going to cases. She was going to trial. She was, I guess she was working. I guess she was working on cases. And they were sending people, you know, sending some people up under her. So what do you think, up under what happened, do you think some of those guys that she sent to jail should be having have retrials because of her competence?
Now, Brother Daniel, now it was allegedly a drug use. Now, you know, they say she had a mental case, a mental issue that she was dealing with. And so it wasn't a drug issue that they per se, they said it was mental imbalance there. So, well, she did have that job, and I don't know how much work she was able to perform because they said she missed a lot of things at work. But go ahead, Dr. Fleming, and address that.
No, she didn't. She didn't. Handle any trial. Most of her time was actually spent in treatment and hospitalization.
Yes.
And her primary problem was depression and bipolar depression. Yeah, but she recently resigned because she recognized that she can't focus on her own mental health needs and at the same time run or oversee the attorney's office. But most of the cases and most of the actual day-to-day operations is handled by her assistant. Who handles and runs the office. That's the person who governor will probably select to complete.
So you're saying the governor is over everything now?
Well, the governor's not over, but the governor, as a result of being the head of state, is responsible for selecting a replacement when the district and our counties are unable to finish their term. If she had resigned about 11 days ago, that would have been a special election. And in all likelihood, a Democrat would have been elected. But since she waited, and I'm sure she did to that prompting of the governor and other
Republicans. Why she waited like that? Okay.
Now, if you appoint someone, in all likelihood, we'll report, appoint a Republican district attorney. And that's probably the only office in Dallas, for the most part, that is occupied by a Republican. Because that office has been a Democrat for many, many years. But, I don't want to focus on some of these individual cases, but I want to talk about what needs to be done. See, the Bible tells us that when the wicked, and that means when the people who don't believe in or accept a theocracy, that is the rule by God, that his word and his principles become the standard for life. If we assume that there is a maker, that God created all things, and he said it was good, and then he put it under the domain of man. And they said, when the righteous are in position of authority or in rule, the people rejoice because there's an understanding that none of it belongs to us. It all belongs to God. And we're stewards. And we're here to use our talents and our time for the common good of all men. But when people don't respect God and the focus is on man and his ability to get positions, to gain possessions, then that's wicked. And we can't expect to have anything other than what we got. And part of that is occurring because there are too many Christians. There are too many congregations. There are too many pastors who are satisfied with being in a church building on Sunday and proclaiming the gospel. And get me wrong, don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with preaching the gospel and proclaiming the gospel because it is the way that we get people into the kingdom of God, under the theocracy rule of God, that then makes a change in life so that it is preserved the way God intended to be. But when we abdicate that role, when we're not aware of what's going on, when we don't form coalitions, when we're divided between Baptists and moderate Baptists and Methodists and non-denominationals, and we're only concerned about our house and our well-being, then the world will go ahead. And so faith in Texas is about.
That is so true, Doctor.
And let people know, we've been praying. And, I'm a part of many faith-based organizations. I've been involved in many ministerial alliances. And I see people fervently praying for God to break yokes, for God to take the taste of alcohol out of the mouth of individuals suffering from addiction, and for God to move people from addictions and prostitution. But somehow, somewhere, we're missing the boat because it tells us clearly in the book of Isaiah and the book of Matthew, that we are to break the yoke of oppression, that we are to set the captives free, that we are God's ambassadors, we are God's deliverers of justice and mercy and so forth. God says in the book of Jeremiah that you must brag. Don't brag about your wealth, about your knowledge and your strength and power. But you must brag and boast about this, that you know and understand me, and that I delight in justice, righteousness, and mercy. Those are three common truths. And we call those God's transferable attributes, the things that God can give us. See, God can't give us his omnipotence, his omniscience, and his omnipresence. Okay? Because that's what makes him God and God alone. He's everywhere, he knows everything, and he can do everything. But justice, mercy, and righteousness, those are transferable characteristics and attributes that he wants to instill in us so that we become indicative and reflective of God, that we have the ability to go and to impact lives and to impact communities, to transform them into what God had initially intended them to be. But that requires us to lower walls, to open doors, to dare to step across boundaries and to take hands. And I'm not just talking about Christians, that our ability to work across faith lines, to work with Muslims, to work with Jews, to show people that we believe in the common good for all mankind. And then to put our bodies online. The other thing that one of my initiatives that talks about, you know, body, ballot, and buck. And people ask, what is that? Well, body is our being. It is our lives. It is our experiences. All the things that make us who we are, our biases, the good things and the bad things, it all helps us understand. And each of us have some differences, some of our experiences, and so forth. But when we recognize that we come together and we put our bodies, we put ourselves in a position, as God says, I look for someone who would stand in the gap that I may pardon the land and pardon the people, but I can find none. So his son came and stood in the gap for us, you know, to serve as example. So we must, you know, position ourselves where people are in need. Like my brother and Minister Lewis, you know, it's well known within the community and the network that Minister Lewis puts his body where it needs to be, and that he, you know, adequately works on trying to get other people to position themselves where there are people who are hurting and lost and lonely, in need of a touch of healing from God and so forth. And then the second one is balance, which means we do live in a country that has a democratic process in place that is built around our ability to vote, so that we can have a government that is ruled by the people, of the people, from the people. And when we don't understand that and don't know how to utilize our system and come together collectively, then we can't really have any power or any influence. When we start talking about the common course and dialogue about the issues that really impact us and our children and our children's children. And so we believe that the time is right. God says that he makes everything beautiful. God now for faith people, not only stand up, but to begin to collaborate and to talk about how we as a group, as a body, can begin to impact our system by getting involved and trying to put people in positions who share our values and ideals, or at least let the people who are in positions of authority know that we're going to hold them accountable and that we have the power to remove them out of office and put someone in. That's what we talk about.
That is so true.
We both.
Doctor, yeah, that is so true. As you were sharing those things, I was thinking how important it is for us to be actively involved in people's lives. You know, we didn't get to where we are by ourselves. Someone encouraged you. Someone encouraged me, and someone encouraged Brother Daniel to be how they could be. And it would be right for us to get some form of success, a confident life, and not to look back and help our brothers through the legal system, through finances, through education. You know, Jesus said, when you are restored, you to help your brother. And in the sense that, hey, when we get out of this, I'm going to look back and I'm going to encourage someone else. You know, because somebody else needs to know that they can get out of these things. Somebody else needs to know that this isn't the end of them. And as Brother Dave was talking about how people that are involved in social change and events and have criminal records, when I was younger, and I had an encounter with the law officers, and they ran a background check up, and I didn't have anything at the time. Then they said, wait a minute, you need to have something so we'll keep up with you. In a sense, that's controlling people. When they know, when they got something on you, they say, wait a minute, you can't do this because we got this here on you. And that's a shame that and throughout life, as you was talking about justice, criminal reform, and regardless of what I done when I was 16 years old, I'm 46, 56, 66. Those things are still in my background. They're still a part of, let's put it this way. They're still a part of or what I do in society. So I'm only able to go so far because of these situations in our life. But I thank God for people like yourself and other people that say, wait a minute, these things isn't right. This background check, hey, I went to school, I'm very educated, now I can't get a job because of something I done in my youth. It's something I'm being punished. I want to be a civic engineer, but because I checked this box, I'm unable to apply my God-given talents. And that's a terrible thing. So thank you for what you're doing. Thank you, Brother Dave, for bringing that up, because sometimes we are scared to do anything because of what we've been doing in the past. And I'm guilty of it. I do jail ministry, brother, and I thank God that they allowed me to go to jail. But it's always that one time that they may pull something up on me, and I've been going down there for 10 years. They said, wait a minute, we've been looking for you. Wait a minute, I've been down here 10 years. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know,
I laugh about it, but it's always that chance. But I'm not fearful enough not to do it. Okay, go ahead, Brother Daniel. Then we'll get back to our guests. Thank you.
I believe that system has to have a check and balance area, you know, because we are not only one of a few races of people that they are adding to society. Now, you got to look now. We got people coming from overseas to America now. They're coming to America. They're getting put in high positions. They have good educations, and they're getting good jobs. And basically, how can you basically pinpoint a person's background when you come from India, or you're coming from Iran, you're coming over here to America? And how can they track people one way, and then you let another set of people over here work and control things and have a high job? And it's biased all together, you know. I'm saying this because right now I live in Irving, Texas, and basically it's African, it's Muslims, it's Indian, and it's a vast a pool of people around here, and basically you cannot check everybody. Except if you go through some system that they designed in order to try to control.
This issue about what I call social inequity. Man, this country has a history of embracing just about every other ethnic group from across the world, except for African-Americans, and then later Hispanics. It's no secret that during slavery, that one of the first things that was done was to undermine the sanctity of the family by not allowing the black man and the black woman to meet and to establish a family, a unit, okay, a small community. Okay? And there were things done economically to empower black women as opposed to black men, to create division and tension between those two. And so it hasn't changed. Now, those things were more overt, and we saw it, and we recognized it. But today, racism has become more systemic. It has become part of what we call the way of life. And it's so subtle that we don't recognize it. There's still an attempt to undermine the sanctity of the family in this black community. We are the ethnic that has a high percentage of what we call broken home, broken home. Almost 80% of our children are born out of wedlock, and so much. And then when you talk about crime, when you go to the Justice Department and you begin to do your research and policy research, you'll see that crime in the black community, for the most part, as it is across America, has been on the decline for the last 25, 30 years. Now, you can do sensationalism where you can take something out of context and then and harp on it and show it all the time and create it in the minds of the people that crime is pervasive. Then the second thing that the statistics show is that drug use and other kinds of addictions and abuse is slightly higher in white communities than in black communities. Yet we are oftentimes portrayed as the primary purveyors of drug abuse and drug selling and so forth. We are overly represented in the arrest record, in the conviction, and the incarceration. And so that's not justice. That's not even equitable because we're not even telling people the truth. And then we assume because people have been what we call domesticated. And what do you mean by domesticated? That means when you take the fight out of a wild thing so that you can use it for your thing. And so in this country, if you have a TV and a radio and a newspaper, then you have been subject to what we call bias reporting. And that's a form of indoctrination. People coming from Africa, coming from India, they're not exposed to all this marketing that creates a need and convinces you that you're nobody and that you need their things. You need this car. You need these tennis shoes with somebody's name on it other than Jesus. Okay? And so when they come over here, they're coming over here free of all that what? Cultural indoctrination. All that marketing bias to create a culture and a generation that looks to mass media and looks to society in general for their marching orders and their values. So they come over here free. They come over here seeing opportunities without the biases. That's what they do. They take advantage of it. When the Bible talks about awake, O ye who slumber, that's what he's talking about. Is that people have to go through something, sometimes suffer and fail, in order to wake up and realize what's going on. Now, let's keep this where it needs to be. Yes, people are doing things. But there's a power behind people. Either you're under the power and influence of God, or you're under the power and influence of the enemy, not of God, because Satan and all his hosts are not fighting a war against God. They can't fight against the Creator. They're trying to convince God that we're not worthy of salvation and forgiveness so that we'll be where they are. And so we're fighting spiritual forces and power. And you can't fight those with money and those kinds of things. You have to fight that by faith. Our words have the ability to call into action the host of God who fight on a plane that we can't. And then we become one force and unity. We doing our part here, they are doing their part there, and the kingdom of God is catching the enemy in the middle and forcing the issue and agenda. So this is what this is about. We got businesses, we got local government, we got educational institutions all recognizing that they've been unable to create this society or this utopia. Crime is teaching and economic vitalization is a norm, and equitable distribution of God's resources, not some man, is the norm. And so it hasn't happened. So now, for the first time in the country, I mean across the country, they're calling on faith-based communities and believers and congregations to begin to make a difference in their community. And man, you know, it's so hard to get us to move. We have so many churches in our neighborhood. On some blocks, you got 3 and 4 churches. You can't drive a mile in a black neighborhood and not pass 10 churches. Most of them are sitting dormant and empty during the week. They come alive on Sundays and maybe Thursday night for a couple hours and Wednesday night. But are they viable? Are they impacting the community for God? Not very much, man. We've gone from 20% poverty.